You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I also invite you to visit and subscribe to Spingola.com, SpingolaSpeaks.net, ScreeningSandyHook.net, and, of course, during the program, you may visit the chat room, which is spingola.chatango.com. If you want to email some questions or comments, that email is comment@spingola.email. Our guest the first hour today is Robert A. Blott. He is an attorney. He is a partner at Taft Law in Cincinnati, Ohio. He is the author of Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. It is the subject of a fabulous movie, which I watched, and the name of the movie is called Dark Waters. And it's really a tearjerker. The whole story is very emotional. And anyway, Robert, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was just an amazing 20 years that you spent. And in your book, you explain how you happened to meet this gentleman, that he called your office, your private line, and wanted your help. And you couldn't figure out how he happened to get your private number, and then he mentioned your grandmother, who lived in Parkersburg, and in West Virginia. That's 130 miles from Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's about a 3-hour drive from Cincinnati.
Okay, so anyway, tell us about what you did. I know you went there. I know that watching the movie isn't like real life, but I was so impressed with the fact that you would do this, that you would listen to this gentleman's story, that you would go and visit. And is it because of your grandmother living there and because of the great times that you had spent in Parkersburg?
Yeah, you know, he called me in my office. This is back in the fall of 1998, and started telling me all about cows that were dying on his property. And at that point, I really didn't know who he was, had no idea why he was calling me. I was about to hang up when, as you mentioned, he indicated that he had gotten my number. And so I stopped and paid a little closer attention to try to figure out, well, how in the world is he connected with my grandmother? And what he explained was he owned property outside of Parkersburg, West Virginia. And you know, I grew up in a military family. My dad was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot as a kid. But we always came back to Parkersburg because that was where my mom's family was from. My mom had grown up there, her mom and her mom before her. And so that was the town that we always went to for holidays, for family occasions. And so I really kind of saw that as the one constant place in my childhood. So, you know, when I heard this gentleman was calling from there, and this was at the request, he'd got my name through my grandmother, it definitely got my attention. And I wanted to see if there was a way we could help him.
Right. And he had apparently made a lot of films and to try to document what was happening on his farm, and talked about the water, and explained how it had changed. It used to be called, what, dry run, and then he talked about the foam and about how the water just started to look like dirty dishwater, and there were bubbles, and there were it was really, really bad, and that his cows were sick, and he was using this camcorder to explain all of this, to document it, which I think is fabulous that he did that. Now, when did you actually look at these films? Did you look at the films, or did you just simply go and talk to Wilbur? His name is Wilbur Earl Tennant, T-E-N-N-A-N-T. Did you look at the films, or did you just go?
Both. We actually first took a look at the films. He came up with a whole box load. As you noted, he had been going out there with his camcorder. This is, you know, in the mid to late 90s, and he had been complaining about white foam coming down a creek that his cows were drinking from. And this creek was running right past a landfill where he could see this white foam coming out of the landfill, going into the creek. His cows were drinking it. They were getting sick. They were wasting away. They were dropping dead, getting tumors. Their teeth were turning black. And it wasn't just the cows. It was the wildlife in the area as well. So he had been complaining. He had been complaining to the local government agencies there, the local EPA. He had complained to the company. Nobody really wanted to talk to him. So he started going out with his camcorder and taking the videotape, and then he took lots and lots of photographs. So he brought those up. I said, hey, you know, bring whatever you have. I'd like to see what's going on there and see if there really is, you know,
You're kind of cutting off. Did we lose our guest, or?
I can hear you guys fine. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Yes, now we can. But then you,
okay.
You just disappeared.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's all right.
But he had been taking all these videotapes, photos. We looked at all of that, and it was pretty compelling stuff. You know, I mean, it was pretty clear something bad was happening there. And so then I did go out and visit as well, to take a look at the property and see firsthand, you know, how this was impacting and not only Mr. Tennant, but his whole family, you know, and it wasn't just the animals. It was the family that was getting sick. They were having trouble breathing. They were coughing. So it was pretty compelling after looking at the videos, the photographs, and visiting the property that there was clearly something very wrong going on here.
Right. And he'd lost, 100 calves and more than 50 cows. And, in the movie when he had to shoot, that one cow, it just broke my heart. I'm a big animal lover but anyway, this landfill, how did there happen to be a landfill right next to his property? Do you want to talk about how that occurred and where all these barrels came from?
Sure. You know, and I try to provide a little of this historical background as well in the book.
Right.
Yeah. But he had, his family, his brother had actually sold some property to the DuPont company back in the early 1980s. At the time, the company had promised they were looking for a place just to put non-hazardous waste, just like office supplies, trash, just good old, you know, non-hazardous materials. And his brother had sold the property to the company back in the 80s, you know, with this promise that nothing hazardous would be there. And it was in the early 1990s that they started to see this change, this white foam that started to appear, and, you know, the impact it started to have on the animals. So they suspected, you know, that maybe something other than office trash had started to get dumped into this landfill.
Wow. Oh, gosh. What a dreadful thing. And And that was, what, 166 acres that amounted to?
Yeah, it was a fairly sizable piece of property. Mr. Tennant's family sold some land. Some of the other neighbors sold property as well, that allowed the company to put together this big enough piece of property to create this landfill back around 1984. And this was being done by DuPont, which at the time was, you know, one of the world's largest chemical companies, but also one of the town's biggest employers. They employed thousands of people there locally. So
right.
When Mr. Tennant, you know, years later started complaining that he thought this same landfill owned by DuPont was generating foam and making his animals sick, you know, sickening the wildlife, maybe making his own family sick. Nobody really wanted to talk to him because it involved DuPont. So many people, you know, their livelihood depended on that company locally. And that's why he was talking to his neighbor one day, trying to find, you know, a lead on somebody that would talk to him about it. But his neighbor had just so happened to be on the phone with my grandmother earlier that day.
Oh, wonderful.
Who had been telling him, hey, my grandson is an environmental lawyer. So that's how he got connected with me. He was desperately looking for somebody, you know, who would talk to him, and, you know, address this issue, with a DuPont owned landfill.
I see that as synchronicity. I think that it was meant that you were to become involved with this. And I think I'm getting emotional. I think that you are probably the one person who would have done what it took to bring this all about, that you were the one person who would spend 20 years and go through all of the boxes and do all the detail work that you had to do. I think that it was just synchronicity.
Well, you know, when I look back at what transpired over these last couple of decades, the stars really had to align
yes.
in a lot of ways for all of this to have happened the way it did. And for this information, you know, which we ended up discovering what I still believe is a massive public health threat, you know, that goes far beyond what was happening on Mr. Tennant's property, but, you know, to something that we now know is impacting virtually every living thing on this planet. It just so happened, you know, that my grandmother had been from that neighborhood, that Mr. Tennant had been talking to this neighbor that day, and
right.
that a lot of these things happened in just the period of time that they did. When companies were still producing paper documents, you know, nowadays, for example, a lot of what happens, you know, if this case were to start today, I would have to go in and tell the company what kind of electronic files they ought to be searching for and what words I want them to look for. And if you think about it, I had no idea what was causing the problem back then. And the only way we found out is by going through and pouring through thousands and hundreds of thousands of pages of files. Nowadays, I don't know if we ever would have found this out.
Right. And when they brought those boxes, and they did it to probably discourage you from going further, they just simply did not know who they were dealing with as the way that I see it. And I have your book on Kindle, and I did a search on the phrase PFOA, and it comes up 500 times in the book. And so can you tell us what a PFOA is and...
Sure. You know, it was after we agreed to try to help Mr. Tennant and his family, we ended up filing a case against DuPont to try to find out what was happening with this landfill, what was causing the white foam. And it was through that litigation that we finally started getting into the company's files. And I one day stumbled upon a document that mentioned a chemical called APFO, or also called PFOA. And as you see portrayed in the film, you know, Dark Waters, I had no idea what that was. And there wasn't much information available, if any, out there telling anybody what this was. So we started asking the company, hey, what is this chemical? And, you know, why am I finding references to it in documents that indicate this chemical might be in a lot of waste disposed of in this landfill? What is it? How do you use it? You know, what can it do?
Wow. And of course, the EPA should have been taking care of this, or at least looking into it. And as you say, everybody in town worked for DuPont. They sponsored everything. They literally pretty much owned the town. And of course, that didn't make Mr. Tennant very popular.
The company, you know,
Oh, you cut out again. We're not hearing you.
Yes. I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, yes.
All right. Sorry, I'm not sure what's happening on my end here, but apologize. But yeah,
okay.
You know, there were a lot of folks in town that were very upset that Mr. Tennant and his family were bringing these claims against, you know, one of the biggest employers in town. And there, as you saw in the film, and as I talk about in the book, I mean, there was just a lot of pushback locally. People were not happy, you know, with the suggestion that the company might be doing something, you know, putting something in there that it shouldn't be, or disposing of waste that might be causing harm. A lot of people did not want to believe that. You know, they had trusted this company. Their family had worked there. Relatives had worked there. Friends had worked there. They did not want to think, you know, that this could actually happen. And it took a long time and, you know, with a lot of information coming out over a long period of time for people to start to realize, you know, this happened. You know, this actually happened, and there were folks that were well aware of what they were doing at the time.
And it's interesting. They probably just assumed that the birth defects that their children suffered and the miscarriages and all of the ill health effects, they didn't connect the two, correct? They just didn't connect the two.
That's right. And, you know, even as a kid, when I would visit that area, I remember people referring to, you know, that whole town and that whole area as Chemical Valley or Cancer Alley.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
That was just accepted. It was almost as if, you know, we're making this trade-off in order to have this nice paying job. You know, we may have to get, you know, we may get sick. And it's just remarkable, you know, to think that that's, you know, the mindset that, unfortunately, that was the case. You know, it just was, it took a long time for people to really realize that that shouldn't be the way. That shouldn't be the trade-off that you should have to make.
Right. Wow. That is interesting. That they would know, that they would acknowledge that people were sick, but just didn't accept the fact that it was from this company. I guess the company really did have a lot of influence in the community, and they sponsored, it wasn't just that they gave people jobs, they sponsored a lot of other things. Go ahead.
You know, they did. In fact, you know, and I apologize, I'm not sure if I got cut off.
No,
earlier, when you had asked me about what, you know, what is PFOA, what we found out was that this was a chemical, you know, that had been invented right after World War II. It never existed on the planet prior to World War II. It had been invented by 3M, and DuPont had started buying this chemical in 1951, and they were using it at a massive manufacturing plant right down the river along the Ohio River. Right outside Parkersburg, to make Teflon. The world's largest Teflon manufacturing facility was there outside of Parkersburg, and it was that facility that was sending waste to this landfill. And that this chemical, PFOA, not only, you know, was completely man-made, it had this unusual chemical structure of carbons attached to fluorine that made it almost impossible to break it down in the environment.
Wow. Wow. Okay, we are going to take a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me.
We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts.
All right. We are back with our first guest today, and that is Robert A. Blatt. He is the author of Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. It is a must-read book. I hope that that all the listeners will purchase this book. It's just a fabulous book. And this story needs to be spread as wide and as far as possible.
Thank you. You know, and that's one thing I've really been really working on for years. You know, once we really dug in to what was going on Mr. Tenet's property and found out that this chemical was not only in the water his cattle were drinking, but was contaminating the water of the entire community and had been being released out into our environment for decades and was in the blood of virtually every person on the planet and likely in drinking water all over the planet. And really, we couldn't get anyone to pay attention to this or to really look into it or even report on it. So I have been doing my best for years to try to get this story out to the public, to the regulators, to the scientific community. You know, and so I was really encouraged to see when the film came out, there's a documentary as well, The Devil We Know, and the book, you know, that there, it's information is finally getting out to the public. And we are seeing finally steps being taken, you know, to try to address this and actually recognizing that this contamination, which really is sort of unprecedented in scope and scale, you know, that people are finally becoming aware that this exists and has likely been happening for decades and decades and decades. So I thank you for providing an opportunity to help get this story out to additional people.
Well, you're welcome. It's an honor to be chatting with you. One of the things too that you mentioned that it was a chemical that was created and that it's all over. It's in the water. It isn't just people who use Teflon cookware. Now, I never did that, that I can remember. I always use Corningware stainless steel, but it's in carpet. It's in fabric. It's all over. And go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we first started off digging into this one chemical, PFOA, which then led us to recognize that PFOA was just one of many chemicals that are part of the same class that we now call PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkylated substances. It's a mouthful, but people now refer to them as the forever chemicals because they all share these similarities of being you know, almost impossible to break down in the environment. Once they get out there, they stay virtually forever. They have this ability to get into living things and build up toxic. They have unfortunately been used in a wide variety of products, you know, Teflon being one of the ones that most people know the most about. But they've also been used in things like, as you indicated, stain-resistant, waterproof clothing, carpeting, fast food wrappers and packaging, microwave popcorn bags, dental floss, paper, cabling. And one of the things that I think folks are focusing on a lot recently is firefighting foams. These chemicals were used in foam that's used and sprayed out in the environment to combat petroleum-based fires. So now we're finding and it's unfortunately, you know, that those foams people were told to spray them directly out into the environment, and we're now finding drinking water contamination outside airports and military bases all across the world. So it's become a massive contamination problem. And because, you know, it's been used in so many of these products for so long, that's how you end up with this stuff being found in the blood of virtually 99% of the people in this country and all over the all over the world, and even in polar bears, because it's everywhere.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness.
So I'm hoping when people look at this story, you know, and if they watch Dark Waters, for example, it really highlights, you know, the struggle for Mr. Tennant and his family and the community there in West Virginia. I hope people, you know, will come away realizing this is not a story just about a farmer in West Virginia or one community. It's really something that impacts all of us.
Exactly. Exactly. Because as you mentioned, it's in so many other products. And products that we all use. Even if you didn't use Teflon cookware, it's still out there in the environment. I distill my own water. And you can make choices to do those kinds of things. But what have you been exposed to in the past that is still in your body? People can take vitamins and drink distilled water and do all those other things, but it's still within, as you say, even polar bears.
Yeah, and the disturbing thing about these chemicals is, you know, once you're exposed, they have a tendency to stay in you for years and years and years. They're referred to as biopersistent and bioaccumulative. They not only stay in you, they build up over time. So disturbingly, unlike a lot of chemicals, you know, we're exposed to lots of chemicals every day, but our bodies have an ability to flush out most of them. And even others, you know, that we're exposed to that we don't get rid of, those chemicals tend to deposit to fat or to places where they're not really available to do a lot of harm. These chemicals have a tendency to bind to our blood and then circulate throughout our bodies for years and years, where they act almost like a ticking time bomb, you know, where they can have the potential for great harm for long periods of time. That's why you have the scientific community, the regulated community now being very concerned about this and raising red flags. You know, and the disturbing part of this whole story is, you know, a lot was known about the risks from these chemicals for many years by the companies that were making them and releasing them. And that information was actively withheld and covered up. And, you know, what I really try to explain, particularly in the book, is how you've got so many different systems in play that caused that resulted in the rest of us not knowing about any of this for decades. You know, the way in which science is developed and manipulated, the way in which the regulatory process is manipulated, the way in which our legal system is structured, you know, and who has the burden of proof. There are just so many different systemic issues that really all combine to produce what is sort of this perfect storm that allowed this to happen and allowed it to go on for decades and decades without anyone really being aware until just recently.
Right. And of course, the company made billions of dollars. And the employees were sick. And in the movie and in the book, you tell about the women who worked on the Teflon line. And it's just so sad. And I just can't believe there are people. And that is why I think it's so hard for people to grasp this, is that typically an ordinary person would not think of harming another individual. And so we just were naive to think that big companies aren't doing something that's very destructive and dangerous, and they just don't care because of the money that they're making.
And, you know, those dynamics are really what I try to dig into in the book. You know, just how does this happen? You know, this is a company that had a tremendous, stellar reputation for leading on the science, you know, and really, you know, being a leader in this regard. So how, you know, how does something like this occur? And there's where you get into this interplay of not only the way the science developed, but the way our laws developed. You know, some of the first laws in the United States that regulated the way new chemicals come out onto the market and the types of studies that need to be done and the type of information that needs to be provided to the public. Some of those laws didn't come out until the 1970s. You know, the U.S. EPA didn't even exist until 1970. The first federal laws governing what kind of information you need to provide about new chemicals coming out really didn't come out until 1976. And think about it. These chemicals were developed after World War II.
Right.
And they were already being released and used in massive quantities in the 50s and 60s. So decades before those laws even came into play. And so they unfortunately kind of sailed under the radar screen for many years because it was up to the companies, frankly, to they had the burden to tell the US EPA and the public if they acquired information suggesting these existing chemicals might cause a substantial risk of harm. And they simply didn't provide that information. They repeatedly came to the conclusion, we don't think there's information suggesting a harm. When we finally were able to disclose the information that they had in their internal files and give it to the EPA disagreed. In fact, they brought one of the first times the agency sued a company over this. They brought a lawsuit in 2004 alleging that DuPont had withheld critical information about these chemicals that if they had provided it when they were supposed to, you know, we might have been able to begin regulating these and addressing these decades ago.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and they did, as you say in the book, they had a legal obligation, but they didn't. And who makes those kinds of decisions? Is the top person? And I know in the movie that you were at a social function and you kind of got into it with the gentleman that and it was a very awkward moment because the entire all the people at this activity heard you and saw you and it was obviously kind of an embarrassing situation, but you'd never back down. You never back down. And I think initially that your company, the law firm that you're with, was hesitant to follow this trail. But then they absolutely supported you because they could see where you were going with it and what you were doing and what you were willing to sacrifice. And I know you made tremendous personal sacrifices to do what you did. And I just admire you so much for doing this.
Thank you. You know, I really was inspired by Mr. Tennant. You know, he was convinced that there was something going on here and that there was information being covered up and that there was a dangerous chemical here that was, and he was right. You know, it took a long time. But he ended up being right. And, you know, I was working at a law firm and I'm still there. It'll be 30 years in September, you know, where a lot of what I had been doing was helping big chemical companies, you know, comply with the laws. So it took me a long time, you know, to really realize that, you know, this could be happening. Something like this really could happen. But he ended up being absolutely right. And, you know, when I was able to present a lot of the internal documents, showing what was really happening here to my partners and the folks, you know, within our firm. And they saw, you know, what was really happening. It became an easy decision. You know, this was a public health threat. And we were probably some of the only people that had this information outside the company. So it was the right thing to do. And I was, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, that the stars aligned in a lot of ways. I was fortunate to be at a firm that took that stance and stuck through it.
Exactly.
Over many years, you know, as you see in the film, you know, there's a period of time where we're waiting for scientific studies to be completed. This is around 2007 to 2012. And, you know, I know a lot of us will remember what was going on during that time period. That was a massive economic meltdown during that time. So, the fact that, you know, I was at a firm that was willing to stick by it, and through that time frame, it was quite fortunate.
Right. And you had to take a couple of pay cuts.
Yeah, that's correct.
And you did go before a judge within 2.5 years after you started this. There was a judge a trial began, and DuPont did absolutely everything that they could to prevent the trial from going forward, to prevent you releasing the documents, to prevent you giving the information that you had discovered. And a lot of other people would have just given up at that point in time, but you never did. There was a doctor, Dr. Anthony Platus.
Right.
And he was a chemist from Washington Works. And what part did he play in this situation?
Dr. Platus was one of the occupational health individuals there at the local plant. And so he is one of the folks that was involved early on in testing the water in it, looking for the chemical in the drinking water back in the 80s, and what information would be reported to the employees about potential health risks. And he ended up being one of the witnesses who later appeared at trial when we finally were able to actually get to trial with DuPont in 2015.
Wow. 2015, you started this in 1998, and it didn't hit the court until 2015. Oh my gosh.
Well, there were, you know, we describe this a lot in further detail in the book, but there were
right.
a lot of permutations, you know, through the legal process. There was the case for Mr. Tennant. That was brought, and then after that was settled, we brought a class action lawsuit for the whole community.
Right.
And that was settled. It set up this scientific panel, and once the scientists independently confirmed that this chemical was, in fact, linked with serious disease in humans, that triggered another wave of litigation by the people there locally who had those diseases, including cancer. And
right.
the first of those, actually, those are the ones that finally went to trial against DuPont in 2015. And that you see at the end of the film, you know, where I'm standing up to begin the first trial. That was in 2015.
Right. And that was just the beginning of getting them some justice for the things that they had experienced. And you really had to win them over by presenting all this evidence before that. And, What an amazing thing. And then there was the medical monitoring. Tell us a little bit about that and how that played into the whole situation.
Yeah, we, you know, this whole situation was occurring outside of this DuPont facility in West Virginia. And when the chemical, we found out, you know, through Mr. Tennant's lawsuit that this chemical was not only on his property, but was in drinking water of the whole community. We were looking for legally ways that we could pursue claims to get it out of the water and to get proper testing for folks who had been exposed. You know, particularly when at the time we were dealing with a chemical that was, you know, what you would refer to as unregulated. You know, there were no federal or state drinking water standards for this chemical. So West Virginia, fortunately, had adopted a claim for something called medical monitoring, where you could seek relief for people who'd been exposed to a hazardous chemical and to get them testing before they get sick. So that was one of the claims we were able to pursue, and we were able to get relief for these folks through that type of a claim. And we were able to, fortunately, set up a process where we had independent scientists who then confirmed that, yes, drinking this chemical was linked with six diseases, including two types of cancer. And when that happened, by 2012, everybody in that community who had been exposed, those 70 or 80,000 people, They were then entitled under our settlement to get free medical monitoring to detect those diseases. And we now have thousands of people in that community who are getting that free testing.
Right. This has not ended. This is ongoing. And the thing, well, your grandmother, she was part of that community. And you remember the times that you spent in that community. And
right.
Yeah, just all these people exposed. Oh my gosh.
Definitely not over. I mean, it's expanded now. It started with one farmer and one family, one property, moved to that entire community. And then we realized, you know, we've now seen it spread across the United States, and we're now seeing this contamination occurring worldwide, you know, Australia, New Zealand, Italy, Germany. It's unfortunate what we're seeing. You know, people are referring to these as these emerging contaminants, you know, that are being found. And the reality is, you know, this contamination has been going on for decades. The only thing emerging is our awareness that it's there.
And
people are finally becoming aware that this has happened.
Right. It wasn't just something that happened in that small community. It's something that anybody who used products created by DuPont is subject to, well, has it in their blood, as you say.
Right. And these chemicals were used beyond just DuPont, you know, 3M. Invented a lot of these, used in firefighting foam, Scotchgard, those types of things.
Scotchgard. Oh, yes. Yes, everything had Scotchgard on it to keep spills from staining. Oh.
And that was one of the closely related chemicals called PFOS, you know, very similar to PFOA. So, you know, it's part of that same family of PFAS forever chemicals. And both of those, you know, were used in firefighting foams that we're now finding in water all over, contamination from, I mean, that's in the water all over the place.
And it could be in skin lotion, makeup, just about anything that you wouldn't even consider being dangerous.
Well, with the release of Dark Waters, there was a coalition of different organizations that got together to try to make information available to people so that they would know what kinds of products were these chemicals used in the past. You know, how can we avoid being exposed to these? You know, most of us, none of us had any choice in having been exposed before. None of us were told we were being exposed to these. None of us asked for this exposure. So to me, you know, it's incredibly important that people have the knowledge and be given the power to know, here's what these are used in. Here's things I can do to avoid this if I want to, at least make a choice. So there's a coalition, and you can find it at fightforeverchemicals.com, for example, where different environmental groups, different community groups, organizations have gotten together to try to make information available to people so that they can know who's using them, where were these used in the past, and importantly, what companies are switching away from them and using alternatives, so that if you want to try to avoid it, at least you might have the ability to make that choice.
Right. And before that, we didn't have a choice because we didn't know.
Correct.
Nobody knew this.
Right.
You don't know what you don't know, and certainly you have trust in these big names, DuPont and 3M. Aren't these wonderful companies? They've made all these wonderful products for us to make life easier, when in fact they were making life more difficult by poisoning us. Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. And it was just more than Teflon pans. Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's see, I'm just looking at your book. Your book is wonderful, and listeners,
I do
just, you need to buy this book. The book is exposure, poisoned water, corporate greed, and one lawyer's 20-year battle against DuPont. And it's just a wonderful book. It's a must-read book. Watch the movie, certainly. In fact, you look a lot like Mark Ruffalo. There's really a resemblance.
Well, he did a fantastic job. He spent a lot of time here. A lot of that movie was filmed here in Cincinnati, actually in our offices, a lot of it. He was really passionate about doing the film in a way that was as accurate as possible, that really showed what it was like for the communities, that were involved and that had to live through this. And really doing it, as honest and as faithful to what transpired as they could. I think they did a fantastic job of taking 20 years in providing that in a way that I think you can see what the essence of what all happened in 2 hours. So I think they did a tremendous job with very difficult material.
Oh, absolutely. And you could tell that you could tell that the film was wonderful. It was dark throughout. The whole environment of the film was conducive to the subject matter. And it was a great film. And I think that people should watch it. You can rent it. You can, it's easily available for people who want to see it. Okay, so where do we go from here? Where do we go from where we're at here?
Well, what I've been really encouraged as the film and the information has started to come out, particularly over the last year or so, we are seeing an incredible awareness growing across the country and across the world. And we're seeing discussions and conversations occurring that I never thought I would see happen. Legislation being proposed, to try to get a handle on these exposures and to prevent things like this from happening and to address what's already happened. We've got water providers all across the country that are now struggling with, the costs of millions and millions of dollars in having to put filtration systems in.
Oh, right. Right. Okay, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. And our guest is Robert A. Blott. He is a partner at TaftLaw.com in Cincinnati, Ohio. He is the author of Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. It's a must-read book. Absolutely a must-read book. Now, I'm just amazed. When I was watching the movie, and when you were down in the parking lot, down in the basement, I thought, oh, somebody's going to try and kill him. And I'm serious. I'm just grateful that you made it through this. But you did have a health issue, which was pretty awful.
Yeah, unfortunately that's the case. And I talk about a little more detail in the book as well. You see it, one or so, or a couple scenes, I guess, in the film. It's sort of developed over time and, it's fortunately, I think, under control now.
Which is wonderful. But I thought somebody would definitely try and take you out because you were exposing something really awful. And thank goodness you had the support of other people, the support of your firm, Taft Law, and that's taftlaw.com. And I'm just so grateful to you for all the effort that you did for everybody. This wasn't just, it was for everybody. For going through all those documents, for putting them all in the right piles, for sacrificing time with your family, for doing everything that you did for everybody else on the planet.
Now, thank you. And again, you know, I think we really have Mr. Tenet, you know, and his family to thank, and Joe Kiger, and, you know, the community there, those folks who were willing to stand up and speak out and take on, you know, one of the world's biggest companies and just say, this is not right. Things need to be different. And, you know, this information needs to come out. And, you know, one of my biggest disappointments, I think, is the fact, you know, that Mr. Tenet and his wife, Sandra, unfortunately, didn't live to see, you know, the fact that this came out. You know, fortunately, his children, his grandchildren, were able to see the film and were, you know, able to see this finally come out. But, you know, these folks were very inspiring, very passionate about making sure, you know, this health threat was revealed and not continued to be covered up.
And I'm sure that wherever they're at, that they are aware of what has transpired and are very grateful, as the rest of us should be and are.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's very encouraging to see folks finally getting the information.
Well, bless you, and have a beautiful day. Thank you so much.
I enjoy talking with you.
I likewise. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Thank you.